The journal Obesity suggests Americans alive today can expect to collectively sacrifice 1 billion years of life to obesity. The sacrifice of 1 billion years of living leads us to ask, can junk food end obesity?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 943rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program. Or hey, perhaps you're tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com over there on Larnaca. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Aaron Shore on the boards. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Aaron.
Yes.
What is your favorite junk food?
Burger King.
Burger King. Okay. Producer Kelly Bayer is out there in the universe somewhere. Also a studio guest today, Jasiri Jenkins-Glenn. Jasiri, what is your favorite junk food?
I'm a stickler for hot Cheetos.
Hot Cheetos. Okay, hold on to those junk food favorites, friends, because we're going to see if we can find salvation in junk food today. Folks, like Time Magazine's God is Dead cover story back in the 60s, a line I saw in the Atlantic likewise captured my attention. Here it is. Michael Pollan has no clothes. Wow, what could this piece of foodie sacrilege have up its sleeve, I thought. Reading further into the How Junk Food Can End Obesity article by David H. Freeman, I then came upon the assertion made by the journal Obesity that Americans living today can expect to collectively sacrifice 1 billion years of life to being overweight. Friedman's article goes on to suggest the movement to a diet of fresh whole foods, as epitomized by the work of Michael Pollan, was rather missing the target with respect to ending the obesity epidemic, and that we would be well advised to turn our attention away from the neighborhood Whole Foods market to look instead to the neighborhood convenience store or drive-thru, where we can find a solution in the junk food. Junk foods, Friedman says, are where we are getting too many calories too quickly and where we can really do something about losing 1 billion years of living to obesity. So today we pause to ask, can junk food end obesity? And who better to ask than the guy who wrote the article himself, David H. Freeman, author of The Atlantic's How Junk Food Can End Obesity. David, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard. You're up there in Boston. Congratulations on the Red Sox.
Oh, we're feeling pretty good about that. Thanks.
Amen. A good thing to feel good about, too. So, folks, we know David to be a pilot who once landed a small plane on the wrong runway and immediately fessed up by writing to the FAA, which in my mind makes him a good writer indeed. But wait, how did the author of business titles like A Perfect Mess, Core Business, the 30 Management Principles of the U.S. Marines, and At Large, The Strange Case of the World's Biggest Internet Invasion, go on to rewrite How Junk Food Can End Obesity for The Atlantic? What was your epiphany there, David?
Well, I think I've been making a gradual transition over the past 6 or 7 years towards focusing on health and especially obesity. I'm still all over the place. I still write about business and science, and my background is in physics. So I'm pretty eclectic. I know about a lot of things and, of course, don't know a lot about anything. But I depend on my sources for any intelligence. I'm just reporting. But, I really have become focused in recent years on having some impact on people's health. And if you want to impact health in the world today, I think you absolutely almost have to focus in on obesity.
Amen. And, well, what about this business of Michael Pollan having no clothes? I had the opportunity to run around with him and Joel Salatin up there in Berkeley a few times, and he had clothes on.
That's a good point. Well, so first of all, as I say in the article, let me immediately point out, I try to eat just the way Michael Pollan says we should. And I think anyone who can do so should do so. It's a great way to eat. And there are probably lots of benefits to eating good, farm fresh, whole foods. So, of course, I'm totally in favor of that. However, Michael Pollan essentially has led much of the world to believe that those foods hold the key to all kinds of health benefits, and anything that's processed, the very nature of processed foods in some magical way creates bad things for people's health. And that's just wrong. It's just flat out wrong. There's no science behind that. And so we need to be careful about what sort of claims we make for whole foods. And I think we're having a lot of trouble because of it.
Well, that's a very broad characterization as well, because processed food could mean anything, and it could be processed with anything, and it can be safe, and it may not be safe. It depends on, you know, what the process was and what was processed into it, I guess.
Yeah, of course, and that's very, very reasonable, and I agree with you. However, if you look at Michael Pollan's writing and what most people who read him believe, it's all processed food. I mean, it's a very blanket condemnation of anything that goes through any sort of machine at a big company is not going to be healthy food. It's treated as if it's a toxin just because it goes through some hopper at a factory. That's absurd. It's silly on its face, and scientists just smack their heads over this kind of thinking. And yet Michael Pollan has won a lot of converts. A lot of influential people believe what he writes, and I think it's just wrong and it's dangerous.
And I have some friends in the processed tomato industry who like to point out the fact that tomatoes in a can are actually more nutritious than fresh tomatoes.
So there's that. That's often true, and it's true actually, amazingly, of a lot of canned vegetables. And in fact, it is pretty frustrating to this idea that if something comes out of a can, it may, in fact, if it came, especially if it came from a big company, we're not talking about home canning now, but if it came from a big company and it's in a can, it's going to give you cancer, it's going to be toxic, it's going to make you fat. This is just magical thinking. And the real problem is, look, I'd rather eat this stuff right out of the ground. And I try to. I can afford to. That food's near me, and I can afford it. So great for me, great for you, great for Michael Pollan. But the vast majority of Americans, they don't want to eat that food. They're more addicted to processed styles of food, and many of them can't afford to eat the kind of foods that Michael Pollan advocates. So what do we do for those people?
And there really is a class and socioeconomic distinction here that you're trying to make, true?
Yes. It's well known that very, very roughly speaking, and this is very rough, it's important to emphasize that, there is a correlation between income or class, if you want to think of it that way, socioeconomic class, and obesity. The poor are disproportionately poor. People in the inner city are disproportionately poor. People in relatively poor rural areas are disproportionately obese. I think I misspoke before. It's a disproportionately poor, disproportionately obese. So obesity, it does not really strike equally across America. So we really have to think especially about the poor when we worry about obesity. And the poor are the very people who absolutely can't get at the food that Michael Pollan says mm-hmm. they have to eat to be healthy.
So when we tell the poor that they should be eating grass-fed beef and organic kale, and we're kind of pissing into the wind then.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to take care of ourselves, those of us who are in a relatively elite part of society. Well, we're doing a good job of protecting ourselves, or we think we are, and we're leaving everybody else we're hanging everybody else out to dry. I mean, I think we have to think about all Americans and people all over the world who simply can't get at these foods.
And so today we're going to point in the other direction, and we're going to say thank you very much, Michael Pollan, but just a minute here. Let's look in the other direction. Let's look at the reality of what most people eat and talk about if it's possible to make that food edible without being expandable, as it were, because that's what seems to be happening right now. We seem to be eating it and getting expanded. Any truth to that notion put forth by obesity that Americans living today are looking at sacrificing 1 billion years of living?
Well, so I think you have to follow the data. That's a very tough thing to analyze. It's a figure I like to quote. Obviously, it's a startling figure. I think probably other studies would come out with other figures, higher or lower. But I don't think you'll find more than a tiny percentage of people in medicine or people in public health who would argue that this isn't one of the worst health crises the human race has ever faced.
And that's what we're looking at today, folks, right here on the Food Chain. Michael Olson with David H. Freeman. The questions on the table today: why do we gain so much weight? Why does our pursuit of health food fail to address collective weight gain? And can junk food be re-engineered to end obesity? Hey, what's your favorite junk food? What if they could re-engineer that favorite junk food of yours so that it didn't make us all so fat? This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with David H. Freeman and you. Please do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Why do we gain so much weight? Oh, boy, we seem to be overweight. You watch a picture of the city and watch people walking down the street. You see a lot of us are overweight. Some years ago, I was doing a radio show about the Sioux buffalo herd in South Dakota. I was at the Pine Ridge Reservation, and I was waiting to meet my connection there that I was going to host on the radio show. And while waiting, I was walking around the convenience store, and I got to reading labels. And it's kind of amazing, folks. You know, if you were to take all the simple sugars, all of the fats, and all of the salt out of that convenience store, there wouldn't be anything left. Do those things have something to do with why we're so overweight, David Freeman?
Yes, I think it's inarguable. Now, people can lose weight or gain weight in eating anything. A couple of professors a little while ago, a few years ago, showed that you could actually lose weight eating nothing but Twinkies and other junk food pastries. So there's no one diet that will work for everybody, and different kinds of diets tend to work better for different people. However, in general, most of us will do much, much better on a diet where we moderate our fat intake because it has twice the calorie density and it's very stimulating, and we moderate our sugar and simple carb intake because it tends to give us a quick energy boost that leads to a hunger crash. So we have to watch out for those foods, and I think they're part of a balanced diet. For most people, the best bet's going to be lean protein, lots of fiber, good whole grains, and moderate amounts of fat and other carbs. So that's what people tend to do well on and are most able to lose weight on long term.
What about, is there such a thing as like healthy calories? I'm thinking about some fats are really good for us to eat, some fats not so good.
There's a tremendous amount of confusion about whether fats can be good or bad. So all fats, and I mean all fats, have twice the calorie density and tend to be extra stimulating when we eat them. They taste great. They give food terrific mouthfeel. This is true of all fats. So for someone trying to lose weight, there's really no such thing as a good fat. Now, looking a little further beyond, there are other possible dietary problems with fat. They can cause other health problems, leading especially more directly to heart disease. So now we can start talking about better fats and worse fats. But I more focus on the obesity problem, and from an obesity point of view, all fats are problematic and need to be moderated.
Because simply because they contain twice as many calories as other food sources.
Exactly. And the problem is, and you have to track calories. You have to. I mean, one way or another, the only way you're going to lose weight and keep it off long term over a lifetime is you have to have some awareness of calories in some form. And if you're eating fatty foods, an extra couple of bites a day can be enough to send you way over your limit. So that's why fats are a big problem.
So why do we like to eat fats and sugars and salts?
Mostly this was hardwired into us millions of years ago by evolution. You know, people are often oblivious to the fact that really up until about 100 years ago, starvation was the biggest problem for the human race, and it was a constant threat. And to a certain extent, the further back in time you go, the bigger a threat starvation was. So evolution made sure that we did everything we could to avoid simply starving, and the heck with everything else. And what that meant was it hardwired us to get those foods into us that would do the best job of letting us keep calories. And if we ever had a chance to have extra calories, to make sure we had a good way to store the extra for the likely starvation period that was coming ahead. So that's why we love fats. It's because of their calorie richness. It's why we love sugar. It's because it gives us that boost of energy we might need to outrace that saber-toothed tiger. I'm not even sure humans overlap with the saber-toothed tiger, but you know what I'm saying.
I'm not sure about outrunning one, whatever the case may be.
Good point. But you get the idea. Yeah. We needed a boost of energy to stay alive. And so those foods really gave us a great survive. They helped us survive. Now they're killing us. And so our brains are working against us, and we have to somehow alter what we do to make up for that.
Now, I'm wondering if our ability to process some of the foods has changed that as well, that equation, that simple equation of that we are hardwired to need these things. I'm thinking in terms of carbohydrates because, you know, in the deep past, we didn't have these highly processed carbohydrates, whereas, you know, the grains that we ate were pretty well whole grains, right?
Yes. I mean, simple carbs have been around. Sugar has been around a long time. Mm-hmm. And certainly all kinds of simple and starchy carbs. I mean, rice has been around a long time. These are all somewhat problematic. It is true that we, back in the past, used to take in more whole grains. And those are a good thing. And so I think processing has mostly caused us problems. And Michael Pollan's absolutely right about that, especially if you look at the fast food industry. But throughout the processed food industry, there's been an emphasis on making foods be even fattier and having even more sugar. And this has completely exacerbated the problem. And so what I point out is that cuts both ways. Yes. The processed food industry has really done a terrible job in terms of the healthfulness of food in many ways, but they're perfectly capable of taking us in the opposite direction if we let them.
And, of course, this was kind of like pointed out in pop culture by books and movies like Super Size Me and whatnot.
That's right. And now I think Super Size Me and some of the other books that have really popularized these notions are somewhat misleading and distorted. I mean, I think it's basically true that the kind of diets most people eat, for example, in a McDonald's or other popular fast food restaurants are terrible. They're loaded with fat and sugar and other terrible things and just way too many calories. And so they absolutely should be taken to task for that. Of course, they're giving us the food we ask for. Now, I don't think Super Size Me or Fast Food Nation or others really did a very fair job of sort of explaining exactly what the problem is. It's more complex than I think those particular documentaries and books made it seem. But still, yes, it's been a problem. And I think now we have to look to the future. Let's see what's going on now. And let's see if this is necessarily a problem with processed food. And when you look closely, you see it isn't. And in fact, processed food can do a lot to help us.
Well, again, my notion is processed food can be just about anything. You know, it depends on one, who's doing the processing and what the process is and what's being processed into things that really make the difference as to whether processed foods are good or not. You know, you talk a little bit about some of the, when you open your article, you talk about some of the great health foods that you run across in your local Whole Foods and whatnot. And then you go to McDonald's. Take us through that one.
Right. So, first of all, you know, I travel a fair amount, and so I end up by necessity eating in a lot of fast food restaurants. And McDonald's and just about all the other fast food restaurants, with very few exceptions, all have healthy options. So I'll typically get some kind of salad with grilled chicken on it. I mean, you can get apples at McDonald's. You can get yogurt. They make a perfectly healthy smoothie. So there are all kinds of good, healthy things that almost any nutritionist or doctor would agree. These are good, healthy foods. On the other hand, you can go to Whole Foods and you can find stuff that's fried, that's loaded with fat, loaded with sugar. Look, you can go to the farm, to your local farm stand, and get foods that are loaded with sugar by, you know, all these wonderful free-range, locally slaughtered animals, fed nothing but the best food, no antibiotics. And pork belly is pork belly. It's loaded with fat. So I point out, you can go anywhere you want, whether it's Whole Foods or a farm stand, and you can get lots of sugar and fat, and that's a problem for obesity. And I think there's a lot of confusion about this, that, hey, if it came from a farm stand, it's going to be healthy for you. Wrong. It can be very unhealthy for you.
Well, we're going to pick up the whole notion of whether we can re-engineer junk food to make it healthy when we come back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for the hour, with David H. Freeman. He, the author of How Junk Food Can End Obesity in the Atlantic. And you, what is your favorite junk food? And do you think we can re-engineer it? 831-479-1080, 800-624-2665. Folks, that Michael Pollan guy would suggest that we would be well served if we ate food that was fresh and local and as close as possible to the source. I think I would agree with that. And I think our guest, David H. Freeman, he the author of How Junk Food Can End Obesity, would agree with that as well. But he makes a equally valid observation that most people don't. In fact, most people get a lot of their calories from fast food or junk food or industrial foods, and that these foods do not have to be bad. They can be good. And so that's the subject we're exploring today, and we're inviting you to participate as well. Do you think fast foods or junk foods can be made to be wholesome and nutritious without being leading us into obesity? That's the question on the table today. David, you know, you talked a little bit about in your piece about how the fast food industry has really been heading down the wrong road with respect to the amount of calories that it has been feeding us. You know, we went through the whole supersize period in which they offered us giant soft drinks. Tell us a little bit about those soft drinks and the calories in them.
So it's just absolutely appalling, depending on which food chain. I mean, you can be looking at getting 1,000 calories or more from a single beverage. I mean, that's just, in my opinion, it's a crime, certainly a crime against people's health. So, I mean, that's...
In one soft drink, 1,000 calories?
It just, I mean, look, you know, depending a lot on things like gender, size, weight, people need different amounts of calories to maintain a healthy weight. But typically it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of around 2,000 calories is a bit of an average. So if you're taking in 1,000, yeah, per day. So if you're taking in 1,000 calories in a single drink, and if you're a kid and you're doing that, I mean, you're potentially in a lot of trouble. Now, of course, kids and some adults burn off huge amounts of energy. So, I mean, if you're training for the Olympics, great. You may actually need that to avoid losing weight. But for most of us, that is just a killer weight-wise, and that really needs to stop.
Yeah, so there's the soft drink. There's the big, huge double cheeseburger. There's the French fries, cooked up in hydrogenated vegetable oils and so on and so on. So, you know, one good, big, huge meal at a fast food place, and you're looking at being over the top already.
Yeah, you sure are. And by the way, restaurants are culprits of all sorts of restaurants. It's not just the fast food restaurants. You know, I've gone around the country eating at places recommended to me by people in the wholesome food movement as having wonderful, locally sourced, completely unprocessed, all natural, organic foods. And some of those places serve meals that were much more calorie dense and overall caloric than almost anything you're likely to have in a McDonald's. I mean, well, even look at something like kale chips. I mean, that's depending on how they're made. Some are healthier than others. But, you know, you take kale and you dip it in oil and some breading and fry it up, and you have a totally obesogenic, calorie-dense, high-calorie food. It's not good for you if you're trying to keep your weight down.
Aren't all good chefs tuned into pleasing our taste buds? I mean, you know, earlier we were talking about how we're hardwired, right? So
yeah.
If you're going to make kale chips, you better make them and get people to pay a lot of way too much money for them. You're going to have to figure out how to make them in a way that will please those taste buds that are hardwired to find certain things, which is like fats and sugar and salt, right?
And this is a real dilemma for chefs, because a lot of chefs, and by the way, this is true of executives at fast food companies too. It's a real dilemma. They know what will make them money, and if they fail to make money, they'll lose their jobs. They'll lose their careers. On the other hand, they don't, I mean, many of these people are very concerned about the healthfulness of the food that they serve the public. And yet, if they serve healthful food, the public will stop buying it, they'll lose their jobs, the companies or their restaurants will do poorly. So a lot of chefs and a lot of executives are really wrestling with this dilemma.
Well, I'm thinking of the convenience store on the Pine Ridge Reservation that I marveled at for one morning way back when, and I stood there and I looked at all of the unhealthy things there, and I got to thinking, well, what would be a healthy thing they could put on the shelves? Got any ideas?
Oh, well, I mean, sure. I mean, there are lots and lots of stuff. So, you know, right off the bat, just to state the obvious, obviously, hey, get some fruit up there, you know, some nice fresh fruit. But failing that, I mean, there are all sorts of fruit-based treats that people can eat. I mean, anything that holds down the sugar to some extent, and especially that avoids fat, that gets some fiber in your food. I mean, it doesn't have to be vegetables. People aren't going to buy a lot of veggies at a snack place. But there are all kinds of fruit-based treats. Increasingly now, we're seeing all kinds of treats that have higher protein. So things that are made, for example, with whey, you can add some chocolate to it, and really it can be quite good, whey-based treats. People, of course, are freaked out about gluten generally for absolutely no good reason. But wheat gluten is another lean protein, perfectly healthy food that can make some great treats. So I make myself snacks all the time. They're delicious. They taste just like junk food, and yet they're relatively low in fat and simple carbs.
Well, one of the things you said struck me, and that was with protein. Because one of the things that really struck me at that convenience store on the Pine Ridge Reservation was a big rack of jerky. And I was there to do a show on the Sioux buffalo herd. And I was standing there staring at a rack of jerky that was made from beef in Los Angeles. And I just stood there and was scratching my head thinking, this is all back-ass words, because actually that rack should contain Sioux buffalo jerky, and they should sell it to Los Angeles. And I was thinking, well, is there some kind of institutional or instructional or intellectual roadblock that we're looking at here with respect to people of lower incomes being hardwired to eat these things?
I think so, yes. So let me just clarify. I don't think the hard wiring of poor people or people in any socioeconomic, ethnic, or racial class is any different from any other. So I think all of our genes are different. So we don't want to make any generalizations along that line. But, you know, environment plays an enormous role, not only in the obvious way, of course, the way we're brought up and what we see around us affects us. It also affects our genes. So we're not just stuck with the genes we have. The genes can be modified. I mean, you don't literally change the genes, but they can be turned on and off by what happens in our environment and even by what we think. So we get affected quite a bit by what we see around us. And that's really what we have to try to change. There are ways, you know, we can't just get people to switch from junk food to healthy food. We tried forever. You can't just say drop the Big Mac and start eating broccoli. It just doesn't work. It would be great, but it doesn't work. So we have to find sort of baby steps for gradually and painlessly transitioning people to a healthy diet.
Well, when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about taking some baby steps with David H. Freeman. He, the author of How Junk Food Can End Obesity, and maybe we can figure out a way of making the snack food that we eat, the junk food, the fast food, the industrial foods, more healthy. Do stay tuned. We will be right back on the Food Chain. This from the Journal of Obesity, suggesting America's alive today can expect to collectively sacrifice 1 billion years of life to obesity. This sacrifice of 1 billion years of living leads us to ask, can junk foods be re-engineered to be healthy foods? Well, they're certainly trying. At least the big snack food companies are certainly trying. But can they re-engineer those foods to please our taste buds that are essentially wired to want something that really isn't all that healthy when we eat too much of it? And that's fats, and that's sugars, salts. David Freeman, the fast food industry is really trying, but what comes to mind in their attempts is the McLean burger.
Sadly, yes. This has stood for a long time now. What happens when a major food company tries to bring out something that's a real health improvement in a popular dish? And in this case, so what McDonald's did was basically they essentially re-engineered the quarter pounder with cheese and then offered separately, not instead of it, but alongside the quarter pounder with cheese, they offered a much, much lower fat version of it. So lower calorie, lower fat, to replace the mouthfeel of the fat that they were taking out of the beef. They used essentially an extract made from seaweed. And what happened was it was a disaster. They called it the McLean Deluxe. I ate a million of them. I thought they were terrific. But the public just basically made fun of them, just wanted nothing to do with it. People, if they're told something is healthier, they assume it doesn't taste as good, especially junk food eaters, whether it does or not. And so it just didn't sell. And this is the huge dilemma facing food companies now. When they try to bring out healthier versions of their foods, a lot of people just won't touch them.
You make the assertion that for the junk food industry to be successful in re-engineering their food to be less bad, that they would have to sneak it on us.
A little bit. I think what they have to do is they have to downplay the healthfulness of it, and they have to play up the deliciousness of it and really get people to understand that this is the kind of experience you're used to getting from us, but it just might be a bit healthier. And I think they can sell that now. Now, for one thing, the McLean Deluxe came out about 20 years ago, so we're changing fast. This is a fast-changing picture. The world has changed. Our technology is better. We understand marketing a lot better in terms of what might and might not fly. And so I think we're now positioned to have much, much more successful versions of the McLean Deluxe.
Well, before we go on to the next point, let's go back to the marketing. How successful are these companies at marketing and managing consumers' demand?
Well, you're going to have a lot of trouble finding anyone who doesn't think that these companies are the world's biggest geniuses ever at getting people to buy stuff and making stuff look appealing and just getting it off the shelves and into people's mouths. So this has been done largely to sell basically crappy food to a large extent. And now I think what we need to do is, instead of saying, well, they just must be evil companies and we have to kill them and make them go away, which so many health food proponents say, instead we have to say, how do we get these companies to actually start turning their genius to the cause of good here and getting people to eat healthier versions of their foods?
How do we do that, given the fact that what we want from them is what we really need? I mean, we're hardwired to want things and too much of it that find us in the fix that we're in.
So there are several things that we can do. One is we can turn up the heat on them to make them do this and continue to shame them any way we can when they don't bring out these foods.
That seems to be working, too.
I mean, I think it does, to a certain extent.
You see McDonald's and all of these companies really striving to be good people, but what pleases us is not what's good for us.
So, I've talked to a lot of these executives, and you know, to the extent you can judge the sincerity and truthfulness of what anybody says, and I think I'm not that bad at it. These people seem very, very sincere. Look, they're parents. You know, they're for the most part, they're regular people, and they have the same concerns we all do, the executives of the fast food companies, and they would love to bring out foods that people celebrate and that they're given credit for in terms of not only satisfying people's urges to eat delicious foods, but also to make them healthier. They want to do it. And one of the big problems is when they do it, it's the health food proponents who actually make the loudest fun of them. And you can see this even recently, for example, with Burger King's Satis Fries, a perfectly delicious, lower-fat, lower-calorie version of their regular fries. And you see a lot of the health food writers criticizing Burger King. Oh, this is just a trick. They're just pretending this food is healthier. It's the same old processed crap. Well, no, it isn't. They should be celebrated, and they should be given credit for it. And if we don't give them credit for it, how can we expect them to do it?
What is the difference? How did they get one-third of the calories out of the French fries?
So they're not really saying. It's a trade
secret. Top
secret.
Ah.
It is. But you know what? This isn't really rocket science. I mean, this is actually fairly well known. The basic approach here is there are ways of simply, I mean, you keep it in oil less time, for example. You change the texture of the potato so they don't absorb the oil as much. You don't have to use any additives. You don't have to use weird oils. It's just a slight process change. And you know, they've been working on it, they say, for 10 years because you really have to get it exactly right so you don't impact the flavor and mm-hmm. taste.
I'll have to try one of those. Hey, folks, okay. When we get back, we're going to talk about McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and Taco Bell and whether those companies can re-engineer the junk food that we love so much so that it doesn't make us so fat. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with David H. Freeman and you. Right back. Do you think the fast food industry can re-engineer its junk food so that it doesn't make us so fat? Got to do something, folks. Got to do something. They're trying, but it doesn't seem to be working, at least according to a recent article in the Wall Street Journal that said that at McDonald's, only 2% or so of its salads or of its sales are in salads, just 2%. But at Taco Bell, has a great new hit. It sold 1 billion Doritos Locos tacos, which have about 50% more milligrams of sodium than regular tacos. So the big hits are the things that really hit our taste buds and the taste buds that were hardwired to want too much of fats and sugars and salts. And so how do we come to grips with that? Before we go back to David H. Freeman, let's go to Wendy. Wendy, welcome to The Food Chain.
Well, I think one way to start getting more and more people eating healthy is to remind these people, like these guys in the gym, pumping iron, eating junk, that will not build a good body. That, you know, it's not the fear of fat that everyone needs to fear. It's the fear of having a good, healthy, working organism all over. And I think people who are thin, except maybe those people who were over there with the barbells, and they're not thinking it either. They're not thinking that a healthy body is what I want, no matter how thin. You can eat yourself to a thin, starved body by not eating good food that actually builds the body.
Mm-hmm. So what about the obesity rate, Wendy? What about coming to grips with that? How are we going to come to grips with the
obesity?
I think
by totally shoving it in the closet and thinking more like the Japanese. It's like a big person is a sumo wrestler. This person you call to move your couch for you. You don't call them to, you know, run 10 miles with you. But they're the strong ones. And a lot of times I see the worst eaters are thin. And they don't realize that, you know, having a little fat on you is a security blanket. Fat people are not, it's not a perfect body by no means, but you still have some security. Where some of these thin people who have to eat a lot, these fed emaciates, they're close to like running their brains to zero.
David H. Freeman, are we too sensitive to obesity?
No, we're not sensitive enough. We're talking about a billion years of lost life just in the United States alone from people who are alive today.
Now, do those people die, though, of heart attacks? Or do they die of fat on their belly?
Yes.
Or are they just more likely to get a heart attack because they're a focal group? They're an easy diet. You know, you can look at someone and say that person's going to die. Or they're going to feel so shamed by being suicidal by being that they're not going to go out and exercise.
You're a tough cookie, Wendy. Thank you.
I've worked hard on it. Okay. Thank you very much.
David?
So, first of all, let me acknowledge that, we don't want to try to build a nation of super skinny people, and I don't advocate anyone to strive for skinniness. I just would like to see people who are obese, we're talking about a third of the population just in the U.S., become non-obese. That would be good enough for me.
Can the fast food industry do it?
The fast food industry can play a huge role. Absolutely. They can't do it alone. But they can do a huge part of it. They can help us. If people have some motivation whatsoever, they can offer foods that taste like junk food but actually have less fat, less calories, less sugar, and that would be a big help.
But they end up with, what the heck was it? Doritos Locos Tacos with 50 more grams of salt. I mean, they try, but they seem to be heading in the opposite direction. David H. Freeman, thank you so much. What a interesting piece in the Atlantic, how junk food can end obesity. Thank you all for tuning in. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.